But we do welcome you to our second and final panel discussion of the day. I've been introduced a couple times, but not by myself, so I'll do so again. I'm Mark Swick, and I'm the community liaison for the Ashok Arnold Jewish Studies Program and also for the Jewish Historical Society of South Carolina. And I'm filling in this afternoon for our scheduled moderator, Randy Weinstein, who's unable to be with us today, though she was certainly eager to do so. So our panel this afternoon, titled The New Royalty, we will offer an important segue from this discussion we heard earlier in the day before our Mapping Jewish Charleston segment, which focused on the King Street of yesterday. So we aim now to refocus on the present and future of the Jewish merchants of Charleston, and we recognize in doing so that in fact none of the businesses owned by our esteemed panelists are found on King Street itself, nor are our panelists merchants in the traditional definition of the word, though Ed, you might get closest. Rather, they are restaurateurs, chefs, and business owners, and it turns out that the new royalty, as we've aptly titled them, has been cooking some of your favorite dishes in town for many years. Our conversation will be largely autobiographical. Why did our panelists get into the food and beverage industry, and what factor does Jewish identity, culture, or community play in their businesses? I'll offer a very brief introduction for each of them, and then allow the panelists to introduce themselves as well as their respective businesses. So in no particular order, maybe I can do it in order, we'll see. We're joined by Ed Berlin of Berlin's Restaurant Supply, Joseph Jacobson of The Med and the Cafe at the Gibbs, and the forthcoming Blackwood Smokehouse, was that right?
Just the Blackwood Smokehouse.
All of these gentlemen have long CVs of restaurants, but it's tough to stay on top of which the most current is. We're also joined by Ben D'Alessandro of D'Alessandro's Pizza and of Smith Street Pizza, Eli Hyman of Hyman Seafood, and Joe Fishbein of Five Loaves Cafe and Sesame Burgers and Beer. Please do join me in welcoming all of them.
I just want to say we need to congratulate Mark. He just got married.
And you missed it. That already happened.
I know, but I'm on here.
Ooh, so Mark, congratulations. Thank you so much. So as promised, we'll begin by having each of y'all introduce yourselves. Where are you from? How did you wind up in Charleston? And what businesses have you been associated with in your time here?
Well, I'm Edward Berlin, born. I'm old and got a bad back, so maybe y'all don't want me to talk long. But Edward Berlin, my family is from Charleston, my grandfather, and on both sides of my family. Berlin's clothing store, I heard Stephen was here this morning. That store's been there 130 years. Growing up, I saw my father work 6 days a week, 7 days a week in the retail business, and I didn't really like that business for some reason. I was more of the kid that played in the street, cut grass, whatever. So as growing up, I never liked the retail business. So my aunt and uncle, my aunt, she was a Berlin, my father's sister, Henry Stevens' aunt, she had moved back from California, and I was 15 years old. They bought a small restaurant equipment company. Charleston at that time, it might have been 15 restaurants downtown Charleston, 3 restaurants in the north area, and that was about it. So I went to work for my uncle, high school, summers, went to the University of South Carolina in hotel and restaurant management. When I came back, I went to work for my uncle. As time passes, I did well, I loved it, Charleston was growing, so I decided when I was about 29, 30, I was gonna leave kind of the family business, my aunt and uncle, and open my own business. My father had passed away, so in 1986, January, I opened up my own business, competition to my aunt and uncle. It was a little, shaky, but somehow I'm here. Today it's become a large business. I have a brother, Ellison, 50 employees, and I have seen Charleston just bloom. To get on the Jewish side, I'm a member of BSBI. My father was the president. My grandfather was the president. I'm still a member of BSBI. I guess the first I remember Lash's Meat Market was really the only Jewish kind of food here. And then I remember Fred and Anita Bernstein opened up a little place called a Deli Den. But, excuse me, there was Zinn's. Zinn's Delicatessen. It wasn't kosher or anything, but it's the same place. Joseph is now opening his new restaurant, same location. And then after that, I remember Fred and Anita Bernstein opened up a deli, Jewish style, I guess you would say it. And then I guess the next Jewish person I knew was Eli's brother Aaron, opened up Aaron's Deli. And then today, these gentlemen right here have gone on from there. That's my opening.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Ben D'Alessandro. I was born in Philadelphia. Moved down here in 1998, went to the College of Charleston, graduated there, and then as the following year, decided to take a chance on entrepreneurship with my brother and opened up a pizzeria at St. Philip and Bogard. Still there, doing great. Member of KKBE, and look forward to being on this panel. Thank you.
Joe Fishbein, local Charleston. I know I recognize and see a lot of people in here that I know. Can't hear me? Can you hear me now? Okay, there we go. Joe Fishbein, if y'all didn't hear that. But, you know, been in the restaurant business for quite a while. Long story, I probably don't need to get into it, but started almost 20 years ago with myself being in Alaska, camping out in Alaska for 10 weeks, sitting in front of a fire with some friends going, I'm going to open up my own restaurant one day. And here it is 20 years later. I've got six restaurants, going on the seventh one here, hopefully in the next month or so. And, you know, active member of Emmanuel. Family went, it's always been a part of Emmanuel. Mother, president of the sisterhood. Father, president of the synagogue at one point. And that's it, you know. And I'm glad to be here and looking forward to this. Thank you.
My name is Joseph Jacobson. I'm born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina.
Closer.
Born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina. I've been here my whole life. I started cooking professionally about 15 years ago. Prior to that, I worked my first restaurant job when I was about 12 at the Med Deli, which happens to be the space we'll be moving into in a couple weeks here. You know, I grew up, went to Addlestone Hebrew Academy, had my bar mitzvah at BSBI. My family has always attended BSBI, and you know, really great time growing up. You know, grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood in South Windermere. We had the Minion House around the corner, and grew up in a family where my grandmother cooked dinner for our entire family every Friday night for between, you know, 15, 25 people. I think that kind of entertainment on a larger scale is kind of what brought me into the hospitality business today.
I'm Eli Hyman. I don't have a bad back, Edward, so I can stand up here a long time.
All right. He works out every day. I have to work.
My name is Eli. I own Hyman's Seafood in Aaron's Deli. I was partners with my brother Aaron for about 20 years. He retired about 10 years ago. Still going strong. We have about 220 employees. My great-grandfather on both sides of my family had businesses on King Street. I remember my father saying he would walk down King Street, usually with Nat Schulman or somebody like that, collecting for UJA, and every business or every other business was Jewish-owned, and they would go collect money for UJA and other charities that were coming to Charleston. After the second and third generation, that's not the case. Most of them are doctors and lawyers now. And I had worked for my father for a few years after I came back from Israel, and it was a dime business. My father would call up Hanes Underwear and say, how is Sam's Wholesale selling underwear cheaper than I'm buying it from you? And so he quickly decided that was not a business for him to stay in. He went into uniforms. And my brother and I, we worked in restaurants. We wanted to have quick money, easy, without a lot of responsibility. We just grew up in the restaurant business and it seemed fun. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And this is 30 years later and I'm still doing it. So I'm having fun. I enjoy it. I hope to do it until my 80s or 90s. I love people. There's parts of the restaurant business that y'all don't get to see when you're in there that I could live without. But the parts that I enjoy out on the floor, I hope to do for a long time. Thank y'all for coming out.
Great. So we'll sort of just keep on working down the line. But my hope is to both get a little bit of sort of autobiographical content and sort of understand who these guys are before we delve into a little bit of Jewish content. So I'm interested just in learning more about the food and beverage industry, what both have been some of your challenges, and then also what are some of the achievements that you've been proudest of.
I want to see what he says.
Great.
I sell equipment to restaurants, so it's a little different.
Yeah.
But I know,
Been easy the whole time?
In the old days, I started with five people, and I knew, I delivered, I priced, there was no thing as a computer. I used to hand draw the restaurants, but hand draw them and erase them. I remember the highlight of my day was when I got an electric racer. I used to race it by hand. That's how I started. I mean, I used to do one restaurant a month. I used to, engineer it, draw it, and put it in. Today, we probably do 10 restaurants a month. We probably install 120 restaurants a year. So the business is definitely computerized, and I used to have a wall of catalogs from probably this long. I used to have to go night after night, make copies. It's all computerized today. So that's how a restaurant gets developed today. We sit with the owner, and I use the Jewish owner of a restaurant is not the easiest person to deal with. My joke is, thank God for Greeks, because Greeks are worse than the Jews. But there's nobody easy in this business. And the week before they open, people get very nervous, the restaurant owners. They don't know. My business was established. I did it 30 years ago, and I go to work from day to day. The restaurant business, if a hurricane comes, if the news says it's flooding downtown, what happens to your rep? It's hard. Now, my sister Dana Berlin Strange owns Jeff Steen's Kitchen. Now, if she came here today, she would have y'all crying. Because she thinks it's the hardest job. Eli could contend everyone. She calls everyone for advice. She knows the rest of business, but in her mind, there's very few females in the restaurant business also, whether Jewish or non-Jewish.
Right, so I did say, there are four men up here.
Right.
Restaurant. We should. Yeah.
There's very few women on.
Well,
he had a lot of girl friends in the restaurant business.
As far as challenges go, my brother and I were very fortunate to start the pizzeria when we were very young. I was 26, he was 24 at the time. And we were very dumb and naive, so we had a lot of fun with it. Our rent was really cheap. We just really, our main concern was getting our name out there and just doing a lot of business and making the place a fun place.
What is the name of your business?
D. Alessandro's Pizza.
And where is it?
St. Philip and Bogart, about 8 blocks that way.
The best pizza in Charleston.
Oh, you're too smart. Thanks, Andre.
Except for your other place.
I don't want to sound me and my brother realized how fortunate we are with the situation we have. We know how spoiled we are. We got in at a good time on a fantastic that is now a fantastic corner. We have fantastic employees, and people really like what we do. It's not a very stressful situation that we're in, and we're very thankful for that. As far as achievements go, I like that we have become as profitable as we are, and we're able to give back to the community in many ways, and that it provides a great lifestyle for our families. Yes, sir.
Good. Right now.
I need to work on getting the word out, I think.
Do you sell anything besides pizza?
Salads. Salads.
Salads?
It's a very small menu.
That's nice and easy, but poor Eli has to do.
Thank you, Mom.
When we started, we did have a bigger menu. We had subs and wings and all that. But we have a very small spot. It's 1,100 square feet. And in order to handle more business, we eliminated particular menu items that slowed the kitchen down. And it actually worked out very well.
Well, why did you start just with pizza?
I did pizza all through college. It was just a business that I knew. It was very simple. People order the pizza, we deliver it, and we take their money.
Sounds like a business
trip. I'd have to agree with Ben on his comment of being dumb and naive. Getting into this business was, obviously you have big dreams and think you can do anything, but it was definitely a challenge. It was a challenge then, still is a challenge, but there's different challenges. Starting off, I think it was 2003 on the corner of Cannon and Cumming Street downtown. Back then, and Ben can concur to this, but it's not probably the best place in the world. Especially once the sun went down, it was a little sketchy over there. But getting that started, and once we had that, it was going back a little bit. My business partner actually started it without me for the first year. He had another partner. After about a year, he called me up and was like, "I want this guy out of here. I need you in there." And I was like, "Okay." So went and bought him out, and we are lucky enough to. For our second restaurant, as soon as I came on, to go into the Millennium Music Store on King and Calhoun Street, which is no longer there, and actually Jerry Shear, who was supposed to be here today.
I'm the fill-in.
Yeah, that's the fill-in. But Jerry and Mark, who I cannot say enough great words about those two guys. Our second restaurant, they had a restaurant inside the Millennium Music Store, so one of the little Kaminsky cafes, and I don't think they were doing so hot. Yeah, I don't know if he wants me saying that, but they sold it to us, and they sold us for a really good price. They financed it for us, and at that point, we really didn't have much money to begin with, and so from there, from that point when I came on with my business partner to 18 months later, we had four restaurants. We went from one to four restaurants. Absolutely no money. We couldn't get any financing from any banks. It was just the two of us working our tails off. Not many managers, and that's all we did was we worked and we kept our prices low, and just all we wanted to do was just get people in there and make a little bit of money, but just to have a line out the door. We were successful at doing that. Along the ways, as we built it and became more successful and started earning a little bit of money, the challenges became with just finding the right people. We were always good at at finding people and retaining them. And I guess we were known as the guys that everybody had nine lives. You could get fired probably 10 different times from us, and we would rehire you the next month or whatever. You know, we have big hearts, and it's probably wasn't the best decisions to make on a lot of those times, but it became a challenge, is that these people that were growing with us, that were with us for 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and they were getting older. They were no longer college young kids. They were becoming adults and getting married and having children. The difficult thing about this industry, and I think everybody can agree with me on this, owning your own business is difficult. But the difficult thing about the restaurant business is that for most of us, it's at least 6, if not 7 days a week. And somebody is, like for my business, I have somebody in my restaurants from 8 o'clock in the morning to 11 or 12 o'clock at night, 7 days a week. So that's, 16 hours a day that I'm thinking about it. Everybody's always like, oh, when do you take off? Or, if I do get a day off, I'm not off. You're always in tune. You're always on your phone. You're always looking at your emails. And that's what it takes to be successful in this industry, I'm proud to say that we've done well. And now we've got 6 restaurants. I don't know if I said it earlier, but we've got the name of our company, it's Glowfish Hospitality, which is a combination of my last name, Fishbein, and my business partner, Glowacki. So we got a Polish guy and a Jewish guy doing all of this. But we've got 7 restaurants. We've got 3 restaurants named Five Loaves Cafe. The other 3 are called Sesame Burgers. My newest one hopefully will be open in the near future in Mount Pleasant, called Ember Wood Fire Kitchen. So a new concept for us. And we're hoping within the next month. One of the biggest challenges that I think all these guys are probably battling with, I don't know, they all have like one store, but having 6 or 7 stores, I'm up to about 250. He's got one store with about that many people, and that's a lot of people, but I've got them all spread out. But finding good people, it is rough, it is hard. And if anybody knows any dishwashers, line cooks, servers, send them my way. I'm willing and able. So, I think that's my story.
Say the name of your new restaurant again.
Ember Wood Fired Kitchen.
That's
going to be in Mount Pleasant, in the Bell Hall Shopping Center off of Long Point Road.
Okay.
It used to be what was it? Bricks Pizza was in there for the last 12 years. Well, then it was bought out by Finn's, and I don't think they lasted about a year or so. But really cool concept. We're still kind of tweaking the menu and evolving it right now, but it's going to be really great. But come and check us out. If I can get some employees open enough, come check us out. So, thank you.
That's not self-serve.
What's that?
Not self-serve.
Yeah, no, not self-serve. Yeah.
I think it's kind of interesting so far, this group of guys sitting here. We're all kind of in different stages of this process. We're all in different stages of this process. Kind of where I came from was starting as a expediter and working my way up to making salads on the line, and then up to saute station. Then I jumped restaurants and got some catering experience, and then came back to the same restaurant, back to Oak Steakhouse again, as chef de cuisine for about 7 or 8 years. We opened another restaurant in Columbia, which was very successful. Unfortunately, leaving Charleston and moving to Columbia is pretty difficult thing to do sometimes. Charleston's very, very nice here. We've got a lot of great things going on. That was right when Condé Nast was first starting to recognize us as the number one city in the world. So kind of the way I've seen things coming up through the ranks is at the beginning of Oak Steakhouse, when we first opened, 2005, we were doing $20,000 nights on Monday. We were doing, $100,000 weeks, $150,000 weeks. They were doing, $5-6 million a year. Then, 2008, 2009, the bubble burst. So you went from doing $20,000 nights on Monday to probably doing $12,000 nights on Monday, which is still a really, really good Monday night, don't get me wrong. But that's a completely you know, it's a completely different thing. So there's a lot of money floating around. And as a young line cook, I'm seeing this. I'm like, oh, wow, you know, this seems like there's a lot of money in this business. This seems like a great thing to do. So from that point, I kind of made my journey to the point that I'm hopefully coming up on here pretty soon. And I started, moving from the next thing. So I became the executive chef. Then I opened a new restaurant. And then I tried to go work for another company and manage two restaurants. And then basically it was all a journey to get to the point of being self-employed. What I've seen through the years is priceless. I mean, I've seen people who open up restaurants and do them the right way. I've seen people who throw $2 million at a project and think that they're going to get some kind of return in a reasonable amount of time. That typically does not work out. I've seen people who have little mom and pop restaurants that kill it, make a ton of money. They put their heart and soul into it, and don't overcomplicate things. So, you know, kind of taking your experience and finding out what the set of variables that you have to follow to get to that next point. The struggle with finding good employees is super, super difficult. They are hard to come by. Luckily, spending 15 years in Charleston and kitchens, I've got a lot of great employees that are loyal to me and I'm loyal to them. And luckily, through that camaraderie, I'm not so worried about the employee problems, but I mean, they are real. I mean, you read about it every day in the paper. However, you know, this is a line of work that it's a labor of love. It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. And if you're not cut for that, if you're not ready to work 15, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, months on end, you know, I mean, that's what it takes to really be successful.
Well, I'm not smart enough to have a simple menu with one or two items. I've got way too many items, and I'm not smart enough to open up 6 or 7 or 20 restaurants. Jerry, Mark, and Joe, these guys, I like to stick with one and do it well and have a life outside my restaurant. I guess I'm fortunate to be able to watch my children grow up, be with my wife, and be a family man as well as a restaurateur. That, to me, was more important. And my brother and I got along fairly well in the business. I think we get along better as brothers than we did as partners, and he's happily retired. But it's a difficult business, and they said that probably the single hardest thing in this business is your staffing. And we have, out of the 220, there's about 70 that have been with me for 10 years or longer, and we do everything we can to retain them. In fact, I think I got in my pocket right here, I got these coins that I give out. I like to manage with positive reinforcement. These are little wooden nickels. On the front it says, I gotta read it. But it says, take ownership and go above and beyond. And we give these wooden nickels out to our staff by managing with positive reinforcement. We have to sometimes manage with negative stuff if they're not doing something right. We found by retaining the staff, by doing positive reinforcement, they then turn in these nickels at the end of the night. We have a drawing once a week, and they get $100, whoever is drawn in the drawing. So if somebody gets 20 nickels in the course of a week, their odds of getting $100 is better than a guy who doesn't get any nickels. That, coupled along with laws and regulations, government regulations, and problems I've dealt with personally, would be problematic. And I'm learning as I go along. I'm still learning. But again, I still love what I do, and I hope to do it. And I'm able to express my Judaism through the way that I conduct my business, how I treat my guests, how I treat my employees, and how I treat my vendors. To me, that's the single most important thing, because I watched as my father conducted his business and his father, how they dealt with their customers and the people that they bought from. Things were done on a handshake back then, and it's not so today. You have to be a little bit more careful in what you say and what you write and how it's written. There's a lot more stuff to be focused on today. But as I said, I'm learning as I'm going along. When I perfect it, I'll let you know. I want to be in Edward's business because he's the one selling all these restaurants. And he makes as much as when they're selling as when they're closing, when they're opening as when they're closing. So he's the smartest of all of us up here.
Eli, hold on to the microphone just for a second. So you brought up sort of the multi-generational components of of your specific story. So that's certainly a recurring narrative within the story of the Jewish merchant. It's something we spoke about before, that that the first generation were peddlers and the second generation had had the brick and mortar, and the third generation often, sometimes more often than not, became doctors and lawyers. And so my question then is both whether or not there was a family history or preceding your involvement in the industry, and if not, what sort of involvement do you hope your children might have in the industry, and if that's not the case at all, then what sort of work have y'all done to cultivate the next generation, and how important is that?
Well, two of my four children have expressed interest. I'm not pushing them because it's not a business for the weary. If you got to really love it, you got to be passionate about it, and have a very, very strong work ethic. You got to be willing to work hard and not be afraid of hard work. And I'm not really sure if I want to subject my children to that kind of lifestyle if they're not able to differentiate between work and family. And it's something that you're married to while you're in the business, and when you come home, you have to separate it and be at home. So the two that are interested, we'll see what happens. They would be the fifth generation on Meeting Street. My great-grandfather had started a dry goods business there, the Schmonti business, and it's passed down, and the Schmonti business is no longer there. We have Costco and Sam's these days. So the restaurant is actually, I think, a good fit for Jewish people because you need a good work ethic. Greeks and Italians and Jews and Chinese, they seem to do very well with this business, but they're also willing to put the time in and work hard. I think it's not rocket science. You just got to be willing to put the time in and care. Be passionate. That's all I got to say.
Mark, what was the question again?
The involvement of your families.
And
if so or if not, whether or not you're working to help cultivate the next generation of restaurateurs.
So Eli's answer wasn't the answer?
Oh, no. They're all long answers, so I'm losing track of where the question started. So I just want to make sure I'm staying pertinent. So, you know, as far as my family goes, I do not come from a family of restaurateurs. I do not come from a family of merchants, even. I guess my great-grandfather, Sam Solomon, on his side, he had the Sam Solomon Company, which later became Service Merchandise. So those of us who remember the 80s and 90s really well, if you wanted to buy any electronics or anything cool, it was in those giant catalogs. So what I take from that is probably not a whole lot. You know, and other than that, in my family, we have... You know, we have lawyers. My father was in the car business. My uncle's a lawyer. I have multiple uncles and aunts and cousins that are lawyers. Really where my passion came from was really from my grandmother. Still, the way that she catered to the family, the way that she brought everyone together, the way that her meals weren't just, it wasn't just, you know, a couple of things on a plate thrown together. I mean, it was a you know, at least a six item buffet. You know, it was very, very, very cool. It was a nice feeling of bringing the family together. And I think she drew a tremendous amount of pride of seeing everybody eating her food and enjoying it. So that, to me, was what got me interested in cooking and hospitality and preparing for people. You know, how that I translate that to the next generation, I'm not sure. I have a 19-month son. You know, he's not ready to start washing dishes yet, but he seems to be pretty interested in cooking. He likes to watch. My wife is very much so involved in the food and beverage industry. She's front of the house manager. She can bake. She's been to the beer house with me a couple times. You know, it's ingrained into our family, and we will have that as a family business. And if my son Mac wants to continue on with that business, then that would be wonderful.
His great-grandfather, Sam Solomon, it was a brother to my great-grandmother, Rebecca Solomon. Uh-huh. And he was the one, he was the patriarch that brought all these people down. I see Chuck in the audience. And from those Solomons and Resnicks, a lot of these families were brought down, and they were put into business with this fellow, Sam Solomon. Melvin Solomon, his son, was one of my mentors growing up, and he told me a lot about business. I'd sit down with him. But, you know, it took back then, there's an expression, it takes a village. Well, Sam Solomon was the guy who really was the catalyst that brought a lot of these families to Charleston in the early 1900s. And they came down with really nothing. He would put them in business or help them out. And my father would tell me stories about some of these patriarchs that would bring in others, family members, or friends of family, and get them started, become peddlers, and eventually opening up their own shops. And it's a bygone era now, but I just thought it was interesting that he mentioned Sam Solomon.
And in Charleston, too, that's still the Jewish way. As far as the people in the community taking care of each other, I needed some help a few weeks ago with a restaurant that I'm purchasing. I needed some help from Mr. Berlin, who, you know, within no time came down.
I feel old when he called me.
He came down, helped me out, took care of me. It was amazing. You know, I call my Uncle Chuck on a regular basis and get him to help me out with legal issues and legal advice. You know, my parents are in the hospitality industry as well. They have a bed and breakfast on Broad Street. So, you know, I think all of that will one day, I think that'll all stay in the family. I'd like it to, as long as they want it to.
As far as my family, my mother's side, they've been in the Charleston area for quite a while. I mean, I can go as far as back as my grandfather. My grandfather, his sister, both merchants on King Street, eventually moving, I think, to like around the Calhoun Street area and Rutledge Avenue and Smith Street. But also on the other side, the Bluestein family. And so it kind of started there. I wouldn't say that was an influence on myself as far as getting into the business. I'm going to point and blame my father. He was a CPA, extremely hard worker. I think I work hard. That guy worked hard for 50 years. I mean, if he wasn't in his office working, he was at home in his office working. So that was my life, was just watching this guy and seeing the work ethics and what he put into it. He always taught me, he's like, you can do whatever you want. You just got to put the effort into it. And so when I came up with this crazy notion years ago of owning my own restaurant, and I didn't know anything. I'd worked in restaurants before, but didn't really know anything about the business. I was in my early 20s. That's kind of what really drove me, and so I'm definitely thankful for what my father instilled in myself, and what I saw him doing with himself, how he got his practice, and now I'm happy to say that he's retired, or pretty much retired. But as far as my family, I've got one daughter, she's almost 3 years old, and I would not want to see her go into this business. If she decides that she wants to, I would probably try to convince her not to. But if I think that she really has it and wants to do it, then yes, I will encourage her to do it. But it's like you heard from all of us and even Eli. You know, this is a business that, well, owning any business is hard, but this is a business that is complete dedication. And it is day in, day out. And as soon as you take your foot off the gas, I mean, it's going to go down, most likely. I mean, unless you're lucky enough to just have really, really great people working for you, which I've actually got a lot of great people working for me, but you still need to kind of guide them and make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. But yes, hopefully I will not see my daughter doing this one day, so.
Well, I don't know if I'm getting this name right. Dale Rosengarten, whoever edited this.
Okay, it's sitting right in front of you.
Oh. Very.
And a listen. Truly a listen.
Fantastic publication. Yay. Reads very well and it's very informative. I was reading it out in the lobby.
Thank you.
My family, on my mom's side, my grandparents came from Germany in the 40s and moved to Scranton, Pennsylvania, where they opened a hat shop, and they did that until some first lady stopped wearing hats, and then that killed their business. I forget which one. But my grandparents were very tight with their money. My parents were very tight with their money. They really placed a lot of value on the dollar and its worth, and they were not frivolous with their money at all. And that really instilled a lot of value in how we operate our business. We we're very dollars and cents people, very profit oriented. As far as my children, if they want to get into it, they can get into it. I would hope that if they do get into it, they do something alongside of just being in the restaurant business to try to make this community and the world a better place for their generation, for their next generation.
I'm going to start off with a story. Eli talked about Sam Solomon. My Uncle Sam, who came back to Charleston in 86, had lived in California, and he went broke, and he moved to Charleston. And my father, Alwin, and Henry Berlin lent him the money for gas to come back to Charleston. When he came to Charleston, my uncle was tried to peddle some chemical. So my father worked all the time at Berlin's clothing store. We had, you know, nannies take care of him. The word Justine's Kitchen was from a black lady that worked for my family. She lived 112 years old. Worked for my family before my mother was born. So when Sam came back to town, my father made a call to Eli's father, Maya Hyman, and said, "Maya, I don't care what Sam Silver's selling. If he's selling water in a barrel, you buy it." And my father helped my uncle. He made phone calls, and people bought from my uncle. And Maya definitely bought from him. And I think he probably had it stored in the store for 30 years, the stuff he bought. I mean, I don't know, but that's kind of how I was raised. I never liked the clothing business. My father was tough. My mother was tough, and to this day, my mother's still living, she's 88. The proudest thing in her life is that I've been a success. I think I missed out. I was 45 to ever got married, never had children, because truthfully, I worked all the time. And I have to say, Eli has got the best of both worlds. Everyone thinks that he works and works, but Eli's a good mentor. He has some good people working for him, and they have a family. So when I got married, my wife didn't want me to work, and that's all I ever did my whole life. So I tried to retire really 3 years ago. It didn't work. I didn't like how my business was running. I went to go back, but I really have to thank my mother, because my father had died. My mother lent me some money. I would have probably gone out of business a couple of times until my brother came in and helped me. My mother lent me money a couple of times because I went to the bank. The bank wouldn't lend me a nickel. They didn't know. You know, I thought growing up in Charleston, Berlin's clothing store, I would give credit to people. I didn't know they wouldn't pay me. That's how naive I was going into business. And I see Bill Novick. His father at one time had the only restaurant equipment place in South Carolina. Jerry Shear says, "I'm just the flavor. I went into the right business. At the right time, at the right business." When I went in business, there was 40 restaurants. Now there's probably 1,400 restaurants. And Eli's brother, Aaron, I did his restaurant. And we worked together. That was the old time. Aaron was like, he worked at Shoney's. And that's what Eli's brother did to learn the business. And then Eli bought into it. Truthfully, Eli, I wasn't sure if that was the right thing. But I felt Eli would just run over his brother. But my brother and my brother work together. We have fights. Eli and Aaron, they work together. Not many brothers that work together today that have a growing business. And we're not professional. I'm not a professional. I'm not a student. I'm just a good bullshit. And I can sell, and now I've got people to do what I used to do. Sorry for my language, what do I know?
No, that's
good.
I just wanted to say something. You know, one thing, we heard earlier from Steve Berlin was that we all help each other. The Jews help each other, and that's the ultimate Jewish value. So my grandfather was Sam Solomon, and my father was Melvin Solomon. And the stories of Sam Solomon are legendary, of him going out in the countryside, delivering goods with his Yiddish driver, the black man who spoke Yiddish, but and thought that my grandfather taught him English. So that those two went out and delivered the goods to the merchants in Beaufort and in all the smaller towns, and it was helping each other and financing the goods. And it's all about helping each other. My father learned that from his father. And you know, we might not all stay in the same business, but we're all still helping each other. To the point that my daughter Rebecca is now helping Jews in the whole community at Federation. So if I just know my parents are looking down from heaven, and my grandparents are looking down from heaven and saying, yeah, yeah, it's going on.
You do good.
I'm so proud of that.
That's awesome. So it's a
good segue. So actually a good segue as far as Jewish values go into my last question, and then we'll open up for a couple more before we conclude. So as you were saying, and thank you, Jewish tradition does instruct us to give back to the communities that support us. And so what I wonder, and I think what our audience wonders also, is in what ways you or your business have embodied that or any other Jewish values. Some that come to mind are tzedakah, which would be charity, tikkun olam, repairing the world, or gemilut chasadim, acts of loving kindness. What roles do some of those play into your business practice?
Well, it's become, every time a Jewish person calls me on the phone, I know what it is. I get calls once, twice a day. I mean, I really go to BSBI. I love the place. I can't tell you I love the politics of the place. But I go down there. I picked up a pickup truck and went to Lowe's and got 10 loads of pine straw to take it to BSBI. Someone saw me and said, are you going in the landscape business? I said, no, that's just what I do. I get an electrician, I go down there and change the lights. That's why I give back to the community. Any Jewish function, they come and borrow stuff. You know, there's a story, this went on, it's not Jewish, but it shows how the Jewish people help each other. There's a Greek fast, just went on last week, and there's a particular member there who handled the food for 10 years. He's a Greek member of the church, supposedly very religious. They found out a week before this Greek fast, Sandy D'Antonio, Sandy Bernstein, she helped them. They found out that this young man was literally screwing them. He was buying the food, taking the food, jacking it up, and charging the Greek church more money. He rented them stuff and jacked it up. They call me. I just sent a truckload of stuff down there just to help them. I didn't charge them. You know, I just feel like God has blessed me. You know, any one of these guys, they know if they call me in the middle of the night, I'm going to get out of bed. And I'm going to help them. They're loyal to me. They buy from me. My business, you can buy from anyone in the world. You can buy internet. I feel like I'm here. They got my phone number, my cell phone's on my card. But Jewish-wise, Marilyn Hoffman will call me. Any Jewish organization, I just help. That's the way I help. The school, we put in the kitchen. You know, things like that. I didn't give them the kitchen, but I gave them a fantastic price. So I feel like that's the way I give back to the Jewish community. And it's not all religions that do it. Just so I use that example, that you think people care about their church or their religion or today's world is not like it used to be. When I first grew up, I gave credit. Today, I don't give credit.
I've actually heard they have employees at Berlin's Because if they didn't, Ed would get everything away. I've heard that.
I'd put the money in my pocket. That's my brother, so you know.
Ben, talk about your block party.
Yeah, the block party. It's kind of like we do it once every other year about. We close down Bogart Street and have a big party in the street with bands, and it's free. Great get-together we have there. I sit on the board over at KKBE. I enjoy doing it. It was a surprise to be asked to do that, but I enjoy doing it. If anybody calls or asks, we don't ever really say no. If you are an organization and you need pizza or you need some money or a gift certificate, we are more than happy to donate. I wish I could do more, but I have a very young family, so I spend a lot of time with them. But maybe once I get older, I can lend myself more to the community.
I'm going to give my phone numbers to him. I'm going to tell you to call me.
744-4499.
I would have to say, just like Ed, we've been around for 15 years, but it is a daily basis that we have people calling us up for donations, and between my business partner, always gets on me. I'm the guy that can't say no when it comes to donations,
So that's who you call.
What's that? I know. I'm almost hesitant to say that because everybody's like, "Oh, okay, let me call Joe." Just like both of these guys were saying, whether it's a Jewish organization or any other organization, we're gonna do what we can do to help out. Whether it's monetary, gift cards or food or whatever we can do, and that's just the part nature of the beast. It's the right thing to do, and it's the part of the job that actually can make you really feel good. Even in my restaurants, I have the same issue with people coming into my restaurants, and I'm constantly just giving stuff away. But it's just who I am, and wasn't really raised like that to just kind of put my money aside and not touch it and stuff. But I always I like giving back. As the years have gone along, it's increased, and I'm hoping to continue to be successful, and I can hopefully even give more and more as the years go along. I think it's a wonderful thing, especially when you can help out even all the different Jewish organizations. That's what I really like. Yes, I am a member of Emmanuel, but all the synagogues around town, I'm constantly trying to see what I can do, especially if they call me up. Hey, what we can do? Usually they don't want the food because they're like, it's not kosher. I have a hard time just really saying no to them and trying to do whatever I can to help them out. So.
Charities. Working at Oak, we did 3, 4, 5 charities a week. People would come to Brett, who was the owner, and ask him. Everybody and their son would be asking for donations and things like that. And back then, I was happy to do as much as we could. One, because it was not my money. In all honesty, it was my time. It was my time, and I was happy to give that. And years and years have gone by, and I'm always happy to give my time because, unfortunately, at this point, I don't have the money to give. I have, but I can cook, and I can put those things to use in that way. More recently than not, I've been the recipient of more help from other people than I've given out help myself. Like I said before, Ed Berlin helped me out quite a bit. We had Mr. Rosen do our engineering for us. He helped us out quite a bit. My Uncle Chuck, another Jewish man, has helped me out quite a bit. As I get closer to opening the restaurant, I look forward to hopefully being in a position where I can give money back and give actual things back other than just my time. But for now, I'm really happy to get my time, and it does make you feel good to at least do something.
I think that all of us up here, we're very fortunate that we're able to express our Judaism through giving and tzedakah. And like us all, we're probably asked, on average, at least for me, 2 to maybe 5 or 6 or 7 times a week for various churches, synagogues, schools. In the 29, 30 years I've been doing this, is when one request that I turned down, it was up in Spartanburg, something about the Aryan Brotherhood or something, they were doing a fundraiser. I had been in business for about 8 or 9 years, and I had never turned anybody down. It gives me great pleasure to say I'm happy to do it. It's one of the things like I enjoy doing in my business, but I wrote them back a personal letter, and I said, it gives me great pleasure to tell you, you can hell no, and explain the reasons why. But other than that, we do get a lot of requests, but it's a part of our business that we're able to express our sense of pride in what we do, and giving back. Last week, there was Teacher Appreciation Day, and we did something for the teachers in the community. And lo and behold, we didn't realize how many teachers were going to come. We did it last year, and it was successful. But we went on a well over a 3-hour wait. We quit taking names at around 7:30 because there was no way we were going to get all these people in. But it was a very good feeling. You're doing for the teachers in the community. We did it for the police officers, and these guys are working hard. And as Jewish businessmen that we're up here, we're representing Judaism to some degree in our face to the Charleston community. So we're all ambassadors to this city and how we represent our business and treat others in our business is a representation of Judaism, what we're all about. Tikkun Olam, Tzedakah, the main cornerstones of our religion and what we believe. So I find that we're very fortunate and able to express it in such a very positive way. And I hope to do it for many more years. And you know, Edward, he mentions all the things he's doing, but one thing he did mention was the Chabad. And Yossi, nobody can really tell Yossi no, and we love helping him, but Edward is always there at Yossi's side in all of his events, and I enjoy helping him as well.
Don't and, leave Marty out. Marty and Yossi Marty, are pretty...
Marty, nobody can tell Marty no either. And by the way, this coming Tuesday, if I put a plug in, this Tuesday is Yom Yerushalayim. It's the 50th anniversary of Israel. I mean, of the reunification of Jerusalem. And I don't know if I should mention it, but there's a movie Tuesday night at the Carmike Theater at Charlestown Square. It is done by the Christian Broadcasting Network. But if we could get the community to attend, I'd like to see the community do something for Jerusalem Day. It is the 50th anniversary, and we should do something as a community. And I contacted all the rabbis. I'd like to see if y'all can make it to the movies. It's 7 o'clock on Tuesday. Not about the restaurant business, but it is
still
Jerusalem
working.
Day.
Still
it works. Good. We're all Jews, right? All right.
Happy to open it up to y'all with any questions.
Well, I just want to sort of, Jewish studies really works on the really the benevolence of others. And these guys are as good at that as anything. I mean, I just think, Joe Fishbein really designed Marty's place, or helped design. He either was there at one point before he might even take it over and manage it as a facility. Eli, you call him up, no matter what you want, you get it. He hosts the kids from the college every semester for a week. He hosts 60 kids. Ben Belisandro, you need a pizza, you get it. I mean, there's no issue. It's just a question of trying to get it more than an hour in advance, because we don't need one pizza, we always need 25 pizzas. And Ed Berlin really is legend. I mean, there's no one. I mean, it really probably is a true story that if not for his employees, and especially his brother, he'd give everything away. I mean, he's done Hanukkah in the Square. We did it first, and Yossi joined. It would never have happened. Never have happened without Ed. And to this day, half the cost of Hanukkah in the Square is Edward bringing all the supplies up. Edward built that kitchen. I mean, he designed it. He built it. So they will go up. Now, Joe Jacobson, it will happen. I mean, after he opens his business.
The day will come.
The day will come. But these guys don't only talk the talk. They will do what they want.
I just want to speak. Without Marty, obviously nothing would be here. This whole organization, I don't know that much about it, but I do know in Marty's way, I've met professional fundraisers. I've met professional people that do this for a living. There's no better person that I'm glad to do it for. I mean, he's a pain in the you-know-what, but somehow he'll nudge me and you know, the students come back. I do this and I do that. But I think Marty says a little blessing for me every day. And as long as I'm willing, and I want to put a little Jerry Shear and Mark Cummings. They own, I don't know the name, but it's T-Bones or Liberty. Jerry came to this town 30 years ago, and I met him. I was a young, just went in business, and he was on Highway 7 building the first T-Bones restaurant outside digging. And I went up and just asked him who the owners were, and I'd never met him before. And to this day, he became, at one time, my best customer, and I owe a lot of my success to Jerry. He was the kind of person, very Jewish-minded. If he told someone to buy from me, they bought from me. Just like Heidi said about her father, Melvin Solomon. Jews help their own. And Jerry, he's not as big a customer today because they have gotten so big and they buy from companies 10 times larger than me. But Jerry always remembered me. He'll call me. He'll get a price from me. If they could beat the price, buy it. But they had a recent fire on Market Street. I was down there that day, and I went and got coffee for him. And I mean, that's just the kind of person I am. And Jerry, in his way, has given back to this community so much. I think it's a race between Eli and Jerry. Jerry's done a lot for the Gentile community also. And he was a big sponsor of Yoshi at Chabad. And if y'all want to see a beautiful building with a beautiful kitchen that they paid for, it's nice. And it's kosher. And I think it's BSBI has a kosher kitchen also. And if people want kosher places to have, you know, have parties, they're there. I just want to say something for Jerry.
Certainly thanks to Jerry and thanks to all y'all. Are there any other questions? Okay, so before...
Well, I actually have a question, because I see four of these panelists are Charlestonians, and there's only one off.
Singling you out,
there is.
Yeah, I mean, are there other people who come to Charleston for business and that are not...
The question
second,
is
third,
about
fourth, fifth generation.
Other Charlestonians who have come from off. I don't know that we can call them Charlestonians. but folks who have come from off and have gotten into the business.
Michael, for sure.
We were very fortunate to get into downtown Charleston at a time when rent was still very affordable. I think that is a big roadblock to a lot of people opening a shop similar to mine nowadays. The rents have just, the real estate prices and the rents have just gone through the roof, and it doesn't allow, you really have to have deep, deep pockets to open something anymore.
New restaurants are opening. They come to my place. They don't represent themselves as being Jewish. If I talk to them, they look Jewish, or I have a name, I'll ask them. But really, I don't think there's that many Jewish young people coming here opening restaurants, in my opinion. I just don't think they're here.
What about other businesses? Well, you wouldn't know, non-restaurant? Just curious.
Well, they're definitely in the workforce, but not necessarily in ownership.
I guess there's, I just talked to Yoshi, there were five new Israeli-owned shops on King Street. So,
a lot of cosmetics. The Israelis also own the Glaze, the donut shop.
Right.
Michael Shemtov has graduated from the college and then opened up some Mellow Mushroom chains. And then, as you mentioned, there's lots of other Jews in the workforce, to be sure.
Michael Shintoff should be up here. I don't know why he's not.
He was invited. There was another engagement.
Correct. He's a tough cookie, let me tell you.
Ben,
let me stop.
College Charleston.
Okay, that's usual.
Got it. So we're grateful that lots of CFC grads come and come and stay. Mr. Nook.
I remember when we had a two-block area, we had three kosher restaurants. This is First, Oprah's, and Hazel's, in Paris, and Boston. We had a couple of kosher restaurants in town. Another Hazel's, and Hazel's. Now, there are a lot of Jewish restaurants, a lot of restaurants in Charleston, but just people, not much. But in the years, Carol's Tavern is the only restaurant. And I wonder if you're not going to come up. And now you see this panel of Michael Chanteau and Mark Cummins and Jerry Shea, you're about to go to 30 Jewish restaurants. 30 restaurants owned by Jews.
Between them,
my question was, is there any hope for a kosher restaurant inside Marty's place?
Kosher restaurant's going to happen. Eli, you going to open it?
Yeah, Eli.
Yeah. Actually, I had a kosher restaurant. I bought a lease out from Michael Rabin on King Street, and I my brother and I were koshering this restaurant. We looked at each other like we were crazy. It was a small little place next to Juanita's, and I quickly got on the phone and started making some phone calls and recruited an Israeli guy who knew somebody who knew somebody. It was a 5-year lease. It was called Pita King, and the first couple of years he did okay. But when he wasn't doing okay, I was fielding the phone calls that this was wrong and this was wrong. And after the 5 years, I decided to give it up. Interestingly enough, I was at Rabbi Revson's house one Friday night, and I noticed how much food he had left over. And I asked him, I said, what do you do with all this leftover food? And it's expensive. Didn't really give me a great answer. And immediately a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, we're going to go into business together. So I said, you start wrapping up all your leftovers, put your stamp on it, and be glatt kosher. And we serve it now in the restaurant. So kosher people that come into Charleston, they can eat at Marty's or they can come into my restaurant. I give the presentation a C-, but I give the taste from Sarah probably an A or an A+. It tastes great. And it gives them an opportunity to actually eat a good dinner in a restaurant while they're traveling in Charleston. I'd like to see them do this in other cities where there's not kosher restaurants, because all we're really doing is tying up a table and reheating it. We're not really preparing it. So it's quite easy, and I think any restaurant could do this in any city. To open up a kosher restaurant and cater in this city, I think it would be very difficult. It would have to be first a good restaurant, which happens to be kosher. And because of the rents and things like that, and restrictions of Shabbos and all that, it's problematic. So I think by doing it through the Chabad, it's made it a little bit easier.
To her credit, Marcy, who we all know for her halot, does an incredible job catering also, and caters stuff here at the college sometimes. And so there's kosher catering, and there was a restaurant attached to her at one point. But there's been different iterations of kosher restaurants in town, and keeping a mashgiach can be hard, and keeping clientele can be hard. But that's often true of everything. I see people starting to walk. Robin, really quick, please.
Yeah, really quick. Okay. Yeah. Because tomorrow is the history of Somerville.
Is it a question? Got a question?
Maybe it's a statement.
And okay.
We're not going to talk about Oscar's restaurant in Somerville tomorrow because it's about the history. But there is a very successful restaurant in Somerville owned by a Jewish private. Mark Dish, Oscar's. Thank you for having your kosher meals at Hyman's, because I had some relatives from Atlanta come here, and they keep kosher. And we went to you, and you ordered it, and it just came over from Mount Pleasant. It was less than 30 minutes. It was great.
Tasted pretty good, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good. I am good friends with Mark Deitch. He is definitely a Jewish man. He's owned Oscar's for 33 years. Both his parents moved here. They both deceased. But he has a fine restaurant in Somerville.
And we'll see it tomorrow.
He just had a knee replacement, so that's probably why he's not here.
Yeah, he won't be there
right.
tomorrow.
He won't be
there. Just had surgery.
Correct.
There you go. All right, without any further ado, by thanking our panelists, please thank them by visiting their places of employment, their restaurants, eat their food, and please join
join us all in back of Marty's Place, walk around the building for a L'chaim.